Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
Happy Friday out there. It is Friday, May 2nd, 2025. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show, a birthday edition of the Gabe Kuhn Show. I'm 30 years old today. How about it? I am Gabe Kuhn, former Memphis Tiger on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning on X at CDunning929. Connor, how's it going, brother?
Happy birthday, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. I realized, so I got a text from my Gen Z little sister, and I don't really know what this means, but Gen Z, I don't understand where their mind is half the time. And I know I sound like an old fart, but I'm 30. It makes sense. She said, I share a birthday with Donatella Versace. The Versace, you know, say she's one of the founders, runs it, the whole thing. She said, be grateful for that. I don't know what that means at all. Yeah, does that make any sense? Be
sure.
Grateful? I also, because I wanted to celebrate the occasion, I wanted to see who I share a birthday with. I share a birthday with Princess Charlotte of Wales. She's 10 years old today. David Beckham. David Beckham turns 50 today. Yes. How about it? And then my favorite, easily my favorite one that I share a birthday with. You know who turns 53 today? Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Oh.
How about it? I think me and him are pretty similar, right? Former trench players in football turned performers, right? Similar? Yes?
I'll let
Give
you have
a
it.
Yes. Thank
That's
you.
My gift to
yes.
you.
Yes.
You are the same as Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Yes.
That's my gift.
That's your
today.
Gift.
Okay. Now, we have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. And we have one guy in particular who has a reason to celebrate my birthday as well, because he got hired today. That would be Tomas Isolo. The Grizzlies make the move and hire their interim. So we'll talk about that. We also have Greg Popovich stepping away from head coaching. With the San Antonio Spurs, Mitch Johnson, his assistant coach, will replace him. As far as guests are concerned, we're going to have 5 o'clock. David Cobble joined from CBS Sports. Maybe get an update on his U10 soccer game yesterday. I hope he got a win. And then 6 o'clock, Parker Fleming will join to talk about Tomas Isolo, what the Grizzlies need to do, and then the NBA playoffs. He's from Sub Sacolitas. That'll be at 6 o'clock. 6:30 is the Blitz. Then we'll get you to the weekend. Tomas Isolo is officially the head coach of the Memphis Grizzlies. We know he is the first Finnish head coach in the NBA's history. We know he had a lot of success for over a decade in Europe, won a EuroLeague championship in Paris, handled business there. Now, once he took over for Taylor Jenkins, in 28 days he had 15 games and only 2 practices. He went 5-10 in those games when he took over as the interim. And here we are right now. He's the next head coach of the Memphis Grizzlies. Now, it wasn't that much of a surprise when you read the tea leaves. At exit interviews, Zach Kleiman spoke highly of him. Ja Morant spoke highly of him. Jaren Jackson Jr. spoke highly of him. Most everybody spoke highly of Tomas Isolo. And if you just sort of took the temperature of the roster, they had the idea he was going to be the head coach going forward. They talked about excitement and wanting to play for him going into the future. I have two overwhelming thoughts about what we have seen today with Tomas Isolo being hired by the Memphis Grizzlies. One, I am a bit peeved at the idea of not having a coaching search. I wanted to see more names involved with this, whether it be Sam Cassell, Mike Brown, Michael Mullen, all the names you've heard up to this point. I just wanted to see them keep this open, keep an open mind about it. So that, to me, is bothersome, to not give anybody else an opportunity to not go after or at least interview experienced head coaching candidates, I think is a miss on the Grizzlies' part. If they were ultimately going to hire Tomas Isolo, they were going to make the decision anyway. It is what it is, though. I thought the coaching search would have helped, at least to a certain extent, the fan base warm up to the idea. Tomas Isolo goes and interviews like everybody else. He does a good job. He ultimately gets the job. The fan base can accept that a little bit more. But right now, because there was no coaching search involved, no outside interviews, I think that the response has been kind of iffy on the front of most of the fans here in Memphis heading into an offseason that is a big, big point of contention. It is a point in this franchise's trajectory where they really need to get some things right, and they didn't have a coaching search. But my other thought is, let's not fool ourselves about this entire thing. We knew last offseason he was head coach in waiting. We knew last offseason that he was brought over from Europe, seven-figure buyout to go make it happen. The Washington Wizards were tied to him. The Grizzlies won the bidding war, and he was on the bench for a reason. We knew that. So today is not a surprising thing. It was obvious from the day that Tomas Isolo took the assistant coaching job that he was going to be the head coach in waiting. And it just came to fruition today. Now, I do want to sort of revisit this. Like, Taylor Jenkins this whole season probably had that in mind. I wonder if there was some internal strife, what was going on there. But I'm not happy that they decided to not interview any outside candidates. But at the same time, this is the least surprising news in the world.
Right. And to your point, I do think there was probably some internal strife going on between Isolo and Taylor Jenkins. Like, we got reports that they didn't agree on some things after Taylor Jenkins got fired. And listen, I totally understand why people are disappointed there wasn't a coaching search. You and I both wanted a coaching search, but at the end of the day, this entire time, we've always been saying, but we think it's probably going to end up with T.I. as the coach because of how they brought him over, the bidding war that they did win. And when he got brought over last offseason and his coaching staff, Taylor Jenkins' coaching staff, got mostly fired and rebuilt, we said, okay, it really does feel like that this is the season for Taylor Jenkins to have to prove it. And if he doesn't, you have the coach in waiting right there. So it does seem like this was probably the plan all along. And that's why, yes, we would have preferred a coaching search because you want to feel like he, quote-unquote, won the job. But if this is what they were going to do all along, what would have really been the point of a coaching search? Because when you look at the coaches that are available, I think one reason I'm not upset that he got the job and I'm going to be rooting for him is there's not a home run coach on the market right now.
Right.
There just isn't. There isn't a guy where I'm like, he would have been 1,000% better than Tomas Isolo. I understand that a lot of people wanted somebody like Sam Cassell, but Sam Cassell has no NBA head coaching experience either. It would have been a very similar thing. I understand he's got more time in the NBA. He's a veteran. He's on a coaching staff right now that's had a lot of success. So he's somebody that we did want them to look at. But then when you look at somebody like Mike Brown or Mike Malone or Frank Vogel, they're available for a reason. Mike Budenholzer, they're available for a reason. They got fired. And there's something about each of them that wouldn't necessarily fit 100% with the Grizzlies. There's always a but at the end of the sentences when you're talking about them. I'm not jumping over, you know, doing backflips for this hire. To me, you know what it feels like? It feels like the Grizzlies kind of hit a double. You've got somebody in scoring position, and you've got three guys up. You hit a leadoff double. You've got three more batters to try to get that run in. You might strike out all three guys. You might strike out and leave them stranded on second base. you also might drive in that run. No. It could work out. I do think that it is important to point out that he got two practices with this team. He got dealt a bad hand at the end of the season in a year where this team was going the wrong direction already.
Yep.
That does matter. Now, during the playoffs and at the end of the season, I wasn't super impressed by some of his X's and O's, but he was trying to implement his system onto a team without practices. It is hard to do that. He was thrown into the fire, and he didn't do great. I am willing, though, to give him an offseason with this team, to give him a better roster next season, which they better do, because if they don't give him, if we're just running this thing back, then we really got to start having conversations about something that I don't want to have.
Right.
But it's what we've been saying. The roster is the priority for this team. If you don't do anything with the roster, it doesn't matter if Greg Popovich was your head coach. It wouldn't matter who your head coach is if this roster is the exact same next year. I think it does matter that the players endorsed him. That does matter. I am also not a, we have to give this guy the job because the players like him type of guy.
Right.
But he checks a lot of the boxes that it seems like the Grizzlies were looking for. And again, I think at the end of the day, there wasn't a home run coach that you could point to and say, that's the guy they have to hire.
Yes.
If that guy was out there, I feel like they probably would have pursued it, but he's just not. You could argue the best coach available is the guy that you just fired.
Right. Yeah, and I will say, one thing that is a positive out of the hiring of Tomas Isolo, you keep some continuity, and the players already have familiarity with him. You can hit the ground running this offseason, start implementing some things where he was not able to implement because he only had two practices in the last 15 games, or the last 15 games of the year, whatever you want to call it. Now, for those that were clamoring for an experienced head coach, I want to sort of sort through fact and fiction here. One, if you're going for an experienced head coach who's been an NBA head coach before, like you mentioned, they got fired. So you have to take it within yourself to do the research to decide why were they fired, how were they fired, what were the circumstances. Kenny Atkinson, who just got the job for the Cavs, got fired by the Brooklyn Nets previously. Why did he get fired by the Brooklyn Nets, and why were the Cavs able to take this shot on him and obviously win 60 games this year? Because you look back at the Brooklyn Nets, and, you know, he just really wasn't Kyrie or KD's guy. That's why he got fired. I don't think it was really a results-based.
It was nothing he really did.
It wasn't really a results-based thing. So that's why he got fired. Now, a guy like Mike Brown, he got fired, and that was results-based.
Yes.
The Sacramento Kings had a decent roster to start this year, and he did not do anything with it. He didn't maximize that talent, and he lost the locker room. Michael Malone, relatively similar. I still think the Nuggets, I still am a little confused by that, but it seems like he lost the locker room, and there was some disagreement behind the scenes with Calvin Booth, the GM.
His players were watching tape.
That's why he got fired, because he had the disagreement. They just cut out Calvin Booth, the GM, and him in one sort of run. So if you're looking for an experienced head coach, you do have to understand those guys got fired. You just have to take it on yourself to decide, okay, why did they get fired? Is it worth taking a shot on this guy? Now, also, I do want to mention this. There is no secret formula to finding a head coach that gets you into championship contention. Whether it's an experienced coach, whether it's a first-time head coach, I think we're at a 50-50 split on what actually ends up working. The Lakers, I know they just got knocked out of the playoffs, but J.J. Redick was a first-time head coach. Obviously, Kenny Atkinson was a retread, and he's gotten the Cavs into title contention. Joe Mazzulla was a first-time head coach. Ime Udoka, same thing with the Celtics, gets to the finals in his first year, first-time head coach. And we can even go back in the day. Phil Jackson, first-time NBA head coach.
Greg Popovich.
Eric Spoelstra, Steve Kerr. Like, for every retread head coach that gets a team into championship contention, you have a first-time NBA head coach that gets his team into championship contention. There's no secret formula. So as much as, like, there were some people out there saying, oh, this team needs an experienced head coach, they need someone who's been in a championship, they need someone who's had some playoff run, there's no guarantee that that actually matters when he coaches this team. There's no guarantee.
Well, it's I don't disagree that that's what this team would ultimately need if it was available. If that is what was available, I think that would have been the type of coach I wanted to hire. But it would have had to be a Spoelstra deciding to move on from the Heat type of deal, or Ty Lue moving on from the Clippers type of deal. It would have had to be some like one of those circumstances and not a guy that has been fired. I think a lot of the coaches that are on the market are really good NBA coaches. Good
NBA
coaches.
They're on the market for a reason.
You also got like Van Gundy who's on his staff. I mean, if I'm going to be completely honest with you, Isolo was not my number one choice. He wasn't.
Sure.
I thought that taking a run at a guy like Sam Cassell would have made a little bit more sense for the Memphis Grizzlies. If you're going with the first-time head coach, I would have liked somebody that had more experience in the NBA. They had been there before. They had been on championship teams, coaching and player. He had the experience. I do think the players would have respected him. That being said, I also just understand why they're going with Tomas Isolo, and that's why I'm not thrilled about the hire, but I also don't think it's a bad hire.
No.
I think it's a, we've got to wait and see what happens. Now, if we're halfway through the season and it looks the same way it did last year, then we can be like, hey,
sure.
Probably should have done it this way, probably should have taken a couple of interviews. I understand the frustration with no interviews, but if this is what they were going to do the whole time, they got it out of the way, and now this offseason is all about the roster.
And I want to be clear about this as well. Zach Kleiman made this hire really last offseason. Ultimately, he was the head coach in waiting. He gets the job. Let's not fool ourselves. This is a relatively risky move on the part of Zach Kleiman.
For sure.
Because this goes one of two ways. Tomas Isolo comes in, gets them into championship contention. They make a playoff run. It looks all great. The roster's better. And, you know, Zach Kleiman gets praised. But the other way this could go, you didn't conduct any coaching interviews. You didn't bring in anybody from outside. You didn't get an outside opinion. You handpicked this guy. If he ends up being bad, and we're in the same spot we are right now going into next season, next offseason, then we're going to have real conversations about Zach Kleiman and his future with this organization. So I think there is a risk, inherent risk, for the GM of the Memphis Grizzlies, Zach Kleiman, in this entire conversation as well.
Sure, absolutely. I think that there's a risk because it feels like this is the biggest offseason of Zach Kleiman's Grizzlies tenure thus far. He has got to go out there and make sure he gets the coach right, and you've got to make sure you find players that can come in and help bolster this roster because neither were getting it done last year. The roster wasn't good enough, and ultimately the coach wasn't good enough. Or the coach couldn't maximize this team anymore. He got them to as high as he could get them. He hit his ceiling with this roster. Is Tomas Isolo the guy that's going to get them over the hump? We've got to wait and see. We've got to wait and see. I think it's a good hire, not a great hire,
right.
But I do have a belief that it could really work out. He had a lot of success in Europe. He absolutely made Ja and Edie look better this season.
Yep.
He has just this offseason got to make sure he can sit down and maximize the rest of the roster. It can't just be Ja you're maximizing. It can't just be Zach Edie you're maximizing. But that's a pretty good place to start. You've also got to figure out the defense. If he can figure out the defense and he can make sure that Jaren Jackson Jr. and Desmond Bane are a little bit more involved and comfortable within that offense, they're going to have success. I think that Jeff Calkins, when we were talking to him yesterday, he kind of nailed it. He was like, listen, this team is going to be a playoff team. We are just now at the point where can you get somebody over the hump now? Can you get to the second round? Can you get it to the Western Conference Finals? Can you compete with the better teams in the Western Conference? Because it does feel like a couple of teams have passed the Grizzlies, like the Timberwolves and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Those teams have passed the Grizzlies right now. Can you catch back up to them? Again, the coach can only get you so far.
Right.
It's going to be the roster.
Yes.
What do you do with the roster this offseason? Can you stay healthy next year? Those are going to be the things that determine the success for the Grizzlies. I don't think Tomas Isolo is going to make them any worse. We just have to wait and see if he's going to make them any better.
Yeah. Now, Parker Fleming, who we'll talk to at 6 o'clock and break down the Tomas Isolo hire a little bit more, he wins the timing award. Last night, he wrote about Tomas Isolo and what he was able to do down the stretch for
right.
this Grizzlies team.
It's so very good. Very good.
It's very good. I suggest you go read it. Go subscribe to Substack Elitist, all that. But he pointed out a few things that we should expect from Tomas Isolo. One, maximizing of the guards, Ja, Scottie Pippen Jr., Desmond Bane. You get a lot more on-ball screens, so Zach Edie will be a guy who certainly is maximized within this offense. He expects a lot of pick and roll, a heavy dose of pick and roll, but at the same time, more off-ball movement. And I think the one thing that Parker says that I fully agree with, don't overestimate what he could have done down the stretch of this season, and also don't underestimate what he can do with a full offseason implementing his stuff. because I think he is a very good offensive mind. What he did in Europe, he was very multidimensional, multifaceted. I know down the stretch of the season they went to pick and roll, and spammed it because he didn't have any practices. You have to rely on what you're comfortable with in those situations when you don't have practices and you don't have time to implement some things. But that's what you can expect. The guards to be absolutely pushed out front and sort of main scoring options for this team. Also, I think you need to look for maybe an uptick in three-point shooting. Desmond Bain is a guy you need to pay attention to going into next year in Tomas Isolo's system. Probably play him a little less on ball. Obviously, he's forced to do that sometimes with
right.
reserve groups.
It's
and if
mostly
Ja gets
injury,
hurt.
Though.
But when Tomas Isolo took over for Taylor Jenkins, there was a bump in three-point volume for Desmond Bain.
For
he
sure.
went from about 5 to 8 a game. So, honestly, I wouldn't mind seeing that number even bump up a little bit more than 8 because Desmond Bain really is, that's his best skill is three-point shooting. I know he's gotten better at all three levels, gotten better on ball. But if you can bump that up in the modern-day NBA to about 10 a game, I think that is a good advantage for you. He's a 40% three-point shooter. You need to do that. Now, one thing that does concern me that we're going to have to figure out going into the offseason is how is Tomas Isolo going to maximize Jaren's skill set?
Right.
Because that was something that down the stretch was very visible. Now, I think there's a cop-out you could use. You could say, well, Jaren hurt his ankle, and he came back a little too early. Maybe he wasn't at 100%. He didn't have the same confidence in himself on the offensive end. That can all be true. He did have about the same volume of shots, so he's taking about the same amount of shots with Taylor Jenkins and Tomas Isolo, but the efficiency
they were different shots,
went
though.
Down, and the shots were not as good of looks, and he got less iso opportunities.
They were threes.
When Tomas Isolo showed up. So that's going to be a big challenge and something I'm paying attention to with Tomas Isolo.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to get Jaren Jackson Jr. going on the offensive end? Because obviously we know he can maximize Ja, and we know that that's going to be the focal point for why this team is going to be, you know, a 40, 48, 50, 52 win team. We understand that. But to get over the hump, you do have to maximize Jaren. You absolutely have to maximize Jaren on the offensive end. I didn't see that from Tomas Isolo down the stretch, but again, Jaren could have been hobbled, and he only had 2 practices. You have to find a way to get Jaren going.
Yeah, and that's why I am going to be curious to see what the strategy is this offseason with the roster management, because if we know that Tomas Isolo wants to maximize guards and maximize three-point shooting, it feels like that's kind of where you got to start this offseason, most notably on the wing. I think that we can all agree that you've got to find a veteran bona fide wing to bring in that has experience. Parker Fleming has thrown out a couple of names that I absolutely agree with. You know, I would just go, just if you haven't subscribed to Parker's Substack, what are you doing?
Two big names he's brought up, Herb Jones, Nikhil Alexander Walker.
Herb Jones, Nikhil Alexander Walker, and then Aaron Naismith is one
Aaron
as well
Naismith.
That he has brought up, who is shooting, I think, like 53% from three right now in the playoffs.
Yeah,
the dude
right.
is absolutely unconscious. But all three of them, they can hit a three, they can play some defense. That's what you're looking for. And, you know, I also think that a potential Jalen Wells leap might be in the cards. Like,
yeah.
He's already back in the gym, and that type of work ethic matters. It absolutely matters. He hit a rookie wall about, you know, 3/4 of the way through the season. If he can come back next year and look like the Jalen Wells we saw in the first half, the first 3/4 of the season, that's going to bode well for the Grizzlies. You also just have to pray that we don't have to hear Vince Williams next year say, I'm still at 80%.
Yeah, right.
It's like, oh my God. So
right.
there's a few guys that may be able to come back to form a little bit. But at the end of the day, go find some players that can be maximized within the system. Again, and that's why in the day of how we talk about the NBA and sports now, I know it may feel like a cop-out that Gabe and I are sitting here and we're kind of like, we got to kind of wait and see to see how it works out. I don't know if it's going to be a great hire. I don't know if it's going to be a bad hire right now. We can only tell you what we know about him.
Yeah.
We can only tell you the evidence that we've seen. There have been some really good things that we've seen, and then there's been some not-so-great things. The not-so-great things have been the after-timeout plays, out-of-bounds plays, or figuring out the defensive side of the basketball.
Well, but also
those things haven't been great.
Right.
But the good things have been the players do like him and respond to him. I do think that he's going to be respected. He's had a lot of success in Europe. To the amount that NBA teams were bidding for him,
yep.
and the Grizzlies won. And that's why, like, I've seen some people say the Grizzlies are an unserious franchise.
Sure.
And listen, I understand you're frustrated that they didn't do a search, but you can't say a franchise is unserious when they went to Europe, identified the best coach over there, and then paid $1 million to get him over here.
Yep.
Those two things can't exist at the same time. You can be frustrated they didn't do a coaching search. You can be frustrated they hired another coach that hasn't had NBA experience. I get that. But they also, they made an effort to go do it. They identified something and said, this is the type of coach that we think can maximize this team, and they went and got him. Is it going to work out? We don't know yet. There are good and bad about Tomas Isolo. I think the good outweigh the bad, and that's why I'm hopeful it works out. But again, what type of roster is he going to have?
Right.
That's going to be the answer.
We keep coming back to that, and you brought up one of the issues down the stretch that really was perpetuated even after Isolo took over, but it was apparent before Taylor Jenkins got fired. The defense. If we're being honest about defense, one, he didn't have Jalen Wells or Brandon Clark. That's pretty damn massive.
No, Brandon Clark
your
is
best
big time.
Perimeter defender at the time, and your best switchable big, your closing big. That's hard.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hard to have a you're good
closing
defensive
four.
Game plan.
Yeah, you're so closing 3 and 4 were out.
You can say he did nothing and took no strides to get that defense better, but can we be as honest and forthright as possible about the way the defense played? The personnel stunk.
Yeah.
You cannot throw that on Tomas Isolo. I do think he'll probably, because he's very much an offensive-minded head coach,
right,
he'll probably have to bring in somebody for the defensive side of the ball. I get that. But you can't...
Maybe you still get Mike Brown.
You can't sit there and say Tomas Isolo didn't take any strides with the defense. Yes, it's true, but you're ignoring the obvious things directly in front of your face if you're hanging your hat on that.
Well, and that's why it is... That's why I'm trying to focus less on the result and more what we saw him doing during games, if that makes any sense. Because with the Thunder, the moment Ja went down, you were missing 3 of your top 6 players, and you're playing the Oklahoma City Thunder, who won 68 games. You're not going to do well. it's not going to go great, all right? It's just not going to go great. But what we could see was he did make Ja and Edie better when they were in. The offense had moments where it looked like it was cooking. Jaren, though, didn't look like himself, but we know he was injured. Santi took a step back, but Santi was kind of weird. He was kind of up and down the whole season anyway, and he was heading toward the right direction by the end of the year. What my biggest concerns with Isolo is the out-of-bounds stuff and just the management of the minute sometimes. Yeah. He still had a couple Jenkins moments, but again, I think he was dealt a bad hand. When 2 of your top 6 players are hurt when you get handed the job, and then your best player goes down in a playoff series, you're kind of screwed.
I'll give him a bit of credit, but also, like, you know, take it away real quick. He did kind of do what Taylor Jenkins was hesitant to do by the end of the season. I know we were getting into playoff basketball, so this is just the natural progression of things. But he trimmed the rotation down to eight.
Yeah, he had about
now,
eight.
The problem was
he kind of had to.
The problem was that
he ran out of guys.
That eighth guy, though, is like, okay, are we playing John Conchar? Are we playing, like, who are we playing? Who can I put in? He experimented a lot even at the end of the season because he really didn't have much that he could.
Right,
he
which
could
then do. But goes back to fix the roster.
Yeah, correct. But he experimented. He did cut down that rotation. And I hope that's something that they do, because among my biggest complaints from this year, even though they had a good first half of the season, really good 2024, right? Like, the Grizzlies had a good 2024. They were second in the West for most of the year.
In December, we were like, this team's got a shot.
But, you know, my biggest complaint was just how many guys were playing and the minutes distribution and what is going on.
You're talking about Jenkins?
And, yeah. You just have to, even from game one, I want to see Ja Morant. I want to see Jaren. I want to see Dez get upwards of 34, 35 minutes per game, because that's the type of players that need to be on the floor for this team to have consistency.
One lesson I hope he learned from watching Jenkins was you have to take every game, no matter when it's happening
seriously,
or who you are playing, as if it is the last game of the season. Because those games you lost against the Bulls, those games you lost against the Nets, they came back and bit you in the ass by the end of the season.
They
bit you in the ass. It made you play a Friday night game against the Dallas Mavericks at home, and then you had to turn around and play the Oklahoma City Thunder on Sunday at noon. And you got beat by 50. That probably doesn't happen if you're if you win those games against the Nets and the Bulls, because you wouldn't have been in that situation.
Yep.
The playoffs would have looked different for the Grizzlies if that didn't happen. You have got to take every single game seriously. I understand that this team, the last few seasons, have had major, major injury issues. We even talked about it. This season was more similar to last year than we're really giving it credit for. It just happened at different times and not all at once.
Yep.
But a ton of guys missed games this season. Go look at the games played this year.
John only played 50.
Players are missing games left and right. And even when they would come back, we could tell they weren't fully healthy. Health matters for this team, but there is a way to stay competitive and care about every single game while still managing minutes. You can't be dropping games to teams like the Bulls and the Nets. You just can't.
Yep. Yep, 100%. The Grizzlies are not going to get a ring this year, but you can go get a ring. At Robert Irwin Jewelers, the number one place to buy diamond engagement rings because you get more choices. Robert Irwin Jewelers has a large collection of natural and lab-grown diamonds in all shapes and sizes. And if you can dream it, Robert Irwin Jewelers can make it come to life. One-of-a-kind engagement ring. You can bring in a drawing, a picture. You can just have an idea in your head, and they will make sure that that diamond engagement ring comes to life. And you get peace of mind with the Meant to Be Guarantee. The Meant to Be Guarantee is a 365-day, no-questions-asked return policy. You have a year. If you buy the ring and you guys break up or you have issues or she doesn't like the ring, you can bring it in and get a full refund. It's that simple. Not a lot of people in the jewelry business offer something like that. But if you do buy your jewelry from Robert Irwin Jewelers, you get free ring sizing for life. So if you gain or lose weight, they can handle it for you. You get free jewelry spa service for life, and that's a bundle of jewelry maintenance services, tightening, buffing, polishing, ultrasonic cleaning, steam cleaning. And they always try to take care of you with great financing options. Ask her now and pay later with financing like 24-month deferred interest and take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. They have over four decades in the diamond business, and they have always served Memphis. Howie and his team try to create a no-pressure, no-hassle environment. Ask questions. There's no dumb questions. Go in and see Howie at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Robert Irwin Jewelers, five locations. Perkins Extended in East Memphis, Bartlett Town Center, South Lake Center in South Haven, and two locations in the Little Rock area. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. Robert Irwin Jewelers are online at rijewelers.com. Now, another team that's not going to get a ring is the Los Angeles Lakers. They were knocked out in a gentleman's sweep by the Minnesota Timberwolves a couple of days ago. And today, they had exit interviews. And I have one question. Are the Lakers blaming Luka Doncic for their early exit? We'll talk about it next. On Wednesday night, the Los Angeles Lakers were bounced in the first round of the NBA playoffs. And it was at the hands of the Minnesota Timberwolves. And, of course, when every team in the NBA gets bounced and their season's over, they do exit interviews. And I think a lot of Lakers exit interviews, especially the questions that J.J. Redick had to do with the series and why it went the way it did and why couldn't they make a run even though Luka Doncic was acquired at the trade deadline. But among other things, J.J. Redick had this to say about why his team was not able to get through the Timberwolves. Okay, J.J., I know you didn't name names, and you really can't name names in those situations, for the most part. But we know who you're talking about. There's no other person you could be talking about. You're not talking about Dorian Finney-Smith. You're not talking about Austin Reeves, who played most of the games this year. You're not talking about Jackson Hayes. You're not talking about LeBron James. He's 40 years old, and he's always in shape, as good a shape as he can be at that age. You're talking about the one guy on that roster who was traded by all accounts because of his shape. You're talking about Luka Doncic. I just find it insane that he's going to go up there and say that. Now, I understand Luka does need to take it upon himself to get into better shape. He needs to make sure he does more conditioning this offseason than he's ever done. I know he's young, but I think he's got that sort of idea. When you're young, you do feel like you're relatively invincible. The more you come in out of shape, the worse your career does go, though. Ask Shaquille O'Neal, ask Joel Embiid, ask all these guys who always took the offseason lightly, got off their feet, didn't do enough in the way of keeping their body the way it's supposed to be and maintain. So he needs to take it upon himself. But J.J. Redick up there saying that? In the end of the day, I know that you have a training staff. I know you have a strength and conditioning staff, but it also is upon you to make sure that your star player is in shape enough to play. But it is just funny to me. This is a guy in Luka Doncic who averaged 37-6 in this series against the Minnesota Timberwolves when the Lakers lost. I don't think he was your problem. I know that there's been a lot of issues and conversations about Luka's shape and everything else. That was not the reason you lost this series. You lost this series because of what the roster looked like. You weren't good enough. So, yes, Luka Doncic, for the rest of his career, needs to be in better shape when he comes into the season. But I don't think that was the reason or really a big reason why you lost this series. Your team didn't have a serviceable NBA big, and the Minnesota Timberwolves had Rudy Gobert, Naz Reid, Julius Randle, Jaden McDaniels at 6'9". They were bigger, faster, stronger than your roster. I don't think shape had anything to do with it.
Yeah, I will say, I think JJ probably shouldn't have said this, though.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand really the point of saying this. This is something you can say behind closed doors. Your roster wasn't good enough to get it done at the end of the day. You didn't have a center, and you ran up against one of the biggest teams in the NBA. When they can roll out Jaden McDaniels, Rudy Gobert, Julius Randle, and Naz Reid, you're going to have trouble when you have Jackson freaking Hayes as your number one five. It's going to be tough for you. And that's exactly what we saw. It's not Luka's fault that they lost this series. No. He's probably one of the reasons they were able to at least be competitive in this series. I would put more blame on LeBron than I would Luka for them losing this series. Austin Reeves also wasn't great in the series at all. So, yes, it is true that your roster has to be in quote-unquote championship shape to win a championship, but I just think it's odd to say that in the exit interview when you know that has been such a big topic surrounding your new prize star, who, by the way, isn't 100% on your roster next season yet.
Yes, and the truth of it is you could view this from J.J. Redick as a challenge.
Sure.
Of Luka Doncic.
Do that behind
closed doors. He's challenging Luka Doncic. But I agree with that, what you just said. You can do that. You can challenge him without saying it to the media. And when you say it to the media and you perpetuate what has been a massive talking point about him in the ouster from him in the trade from Dallas, and it's one of his biggest knocks, I don't know if that's going to land in that way for a guy like Luka Doncic. I don't know if that's going to land. I don't see Luka hearing JJ say that at a press conference and taking it as a personal challenge. I just don't see that being the case.
I would also like to add, and it's not that I fully agree with what I'm about to say, but JJ, you haven't won a championship?
Yeah.
You as a coach or as a player?
Yeah.
So what do you – I'm not sure you should be talking about championship shape when you haven't seen it on a team that you've been on. I have found JJ's, I'm a fan of his. I think he had a lot of success this year as a first-time head coach in a tough circumstance. Yes, he was also gifted Luka halfway through the season. That certainly helps. But his last few press conferences have not been great.
No.
You haven't really earned the right to do this stuff yet.
Well,
I just don't. He should take more accountability than he is.
Here's what I will say.
And stop talking about championship shape when you're clearly talking about one guy.
Here's the bail I will shoot him. He shoots back at media members for asking stupid questions,
yes,
which I do appreciate in a rather big way. And we've seen it in the past from very successful head coaches. Eric Spoelstra gets a little angry. Greg Popovich, who's no longer the coach for the Spurs, we'll talk about that a little bit later, he was always like this. So, like, we have a precedent for coaches going after the media, getting annoyed with them and the narratives they're trying to push. And he pushes back and he claps back. But when you're the head coach of the Lakers, when you have this spotlight on you, when you were a first-time head coach coming straight from TV, I think you need to tread a little bit more lightly with the media, or they could turn on you and it looks bad and you get ousted quicker than you need to be ousted as the Lakers head coach, because we know they like firing head coaches. So I think he needs to tread more lightly than he is right this second. I get what he does. Hell, some of the responses he gives, I agree with.
I think he's mostly done a great job.
But I do think with the media, he needs to be a little less prickly considering the L.A. market and everything else. He's
right.
Got to be more careful.
Well, like the question that everybody, or the moment that we're really talking about is somebody asked him, they asked him a stupid question. It's not a question
before the
you should ask a coach. They asked him basically, did you consult with your assistant coaches or did you just make the decision to make sure these guys were playing? There's a way to ask that question that makes a lot more sense, because I know what he was trying to ask. He was trying to ask, do you regret playing five guys the entire time in the second half, and do you think they ran out of steam? That's basically what he was trying to ask.
But the media member basically made the assumption already that he did not consult.
He insinuated that J.J. Redick just did not talk to his assistant coaches at all. So it was a dumb question, but his response was also a bit ridiculous, because at the end of the day, I get why he was playing all those guys in the second half, but they did run out of steam.
Yeah.
And it did lead to you losing the game. You had a 10-point lead.
And then you want to talk about shape, championship shape.
And then you want to talk. Exactly. That's exactly where I was going. That's exactly where I was going.
Right. It's like, I don't know. You just got to tread a little more lightly. He just does. And
that being
I will
said,
say.
I think he's a good coach.
I think he's a good coach. I also think this. The way he responded to that media member, I think it was a stupid question, all that, but it did highlight something that is a bit concerning. He was wound tight before that game.
Yeah.
Very, very nervous, and it felt like the team followed that, especially in the first half. They couldn't do anything correct. They were horrible in that first quarter, in that first half. So I think that's something he needs to work on as well. Now, we also learned at Exit Interviews, and take this for what it's worth, I know people have gotten used to the LeBron James injury after being knocked out of the playoffs when he was with the Cavs and the Heat. It always happened. We know. I completely get it. Turns out, LeBron James has a grade 2 MCL sprain, and he played the rest of the game on it. Now, I actually have experience. That was my only injury, only big injury I had at the University of Memphis. Grade 2 MCL sprain means you have a tear in it. You should not play on it. It is honestly, I know people are going to make their jokes about LeBron James claiming injury after being knocked out in the first round. But a grade 2 MCL sprain can lead to a full MCL tear. And if you tear your MCL, usually the ACL follows it, and he's 40 years old. If I would have known that in the middle of that game, that would have changed the outlook on how I viewed LeBron James down the stretch. I think it very much is an explanation. And again, I know people are going to make their jokes. It's very much an explanation why he wasn't attacking the rim and why he settled for jump shots. Very much an explanation. And why he couldn't move very, very well laterally down the stretch of that game to play defense. A grade 2 MCL sprain, your knee is unstable as hell unless you have a brace on it. He didn't have a brace on it. He just had a sleeve. I think it's a very good explainer as to what we saw from LeBron James down the stretch in Games 4 and Games 5. When you look at how he played, it seemed like he ran out of steam. I think it had more to do with his knee, quite frankly.
I think that would make sense. I think it makes sense. If he has an MCL strain and it is grade 2, yeah, the way he was playing makes a lot more sense. He wasn't in the paint as much. He couldn't really box people out. He was slow on defense. All of that makes sense. And then we also found out that Austin Reeves was dealing with the toe thing. I do think it's a bit, you can make fun of the fact that it came out right after the playoffs.
Of course, yes.
It is
right
a
on
trend
time,
that
we
have seen the last few years for sure. But if they are truly injured in this way, it makes sense why they lost the series. I think they probably will. I mean, we saw they would have lost anyway, probably. Yeah. But it certainly didn't help.
Yeah, but it is kind of funny though, Connor. We can make fun of it. It's always something every year. But also, I do think people need to take into account, like, we've seen this guy be 35 plus for 5 years at this point. We've seen him past his 30s for a decade. If you're playing 82 plus games in a season, chances are there is some underlying injury that you're playing through during a year. So, you know, he doesn't have to mention it every time. He decides to mention it every time once he gets knocked out of the playoffs. But it's not out of the realm of possibility that he is very much injured when he tells you that he's injured after the season, after being knocked out of the playoffs. It's funny. I get it. But at the same time, we can use our thinking caps and understand that, yeah, he probably is injured every time he tells us he is injured. Now, you're probably, you know, on your way home, hard week of work. And when you have a hard week of work, you know what helps? Obviously, you need to drink responsibly. But a bottle of Old Dominic does help. It helps you wind down, sitting in front of your TV, watching the NBA playoffs. Make sure you go grab a bottle of Old Dominic from your local liquor store. I know how tempting it is to buy that national brand. You have to break that habit, though. Old Dominic has gin, vodka, toddy, bourbon, and whiskey. They have four separate normal bottles of whiskey, but they have a wheat single barrel that has just come out. Make sure you go get your hands on a bottle. Price range about $60 to $70. A little more sweeter. It's got more sweet notes than a lot of their other bourbons or whiskeys. But a bottle of Old Dominic is the most fresh, most full spirit you can buy in this city. And the distillery is right here, right on the riverfront. 305 South Front Street is where you can find them. They have events all the time, including, but not limited to, coming up this weekend. They're going to have a derby party. So you can go celebrate the Kentucky Derby over there. Coming up tomorrow, midday. So they'll have a derby party. They also have karaoke from 6 to 9 on Thursdays. They have the Beyond the Barrel tours every single month. Take advantage of all those things. Ship Old Dominic Spirits. All you have to do for that, go to olddominic.com, click on their list, go check out, and you can send Old Dominic anywhere in the United States of America. And always remember, they are the official spirit of the Memphis Grizzlies. Two bar locations inside FedEx Forum. So if you're showing up for a game, whether it be Tigers, Grizzlies, it could be a comedian even, it could be a musical act, go to one of those two bar locations to enjoy a craft cocktail made by my good friends at Old Dominic. Old Dominic Distillery, come say hi. Now it's time to get to hour number two, and opening up hour number two will be David Cobb from CBS Sports. Stick around.